Hour number three, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Thursday. Again, live at Duncan here at 1040 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Nashville, taking donations for the Nashville Children's Alliance Stuffed Toys. We have done, you all have done really great with this, bringing stuffed toys, and we appreciate it. Thanks to Nashville Metro Police Department, the Catalano Group, the Bluemont Group, Family Leisure, Thompson Machinery, Richmar Flores, Right Time HVAC, and Relidyne. We say hello now to our friend Greg Wyshynski from ESPN, senior NHL writer for them, presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Greg, it's never too early to talk trade deadline. I always love when you do the trade tiers, and you have done your first edition of that today on ESPN.com. How you doing?
I'm good, except like the entire trade board now just comes with the caveat, if this team isn't in the playoff hunt, if this one's not in the playoff hunt. I mean, like, there's so much parity in the NHL this year, Nashville included, that you have to approach this thing wondering, you know, hey, listen, if this team lingers on and is close to a playoff spot come, say, January or February, this guy might not move. So it was a tricky one to build out of maybe a few players in Vancouver that could be on the move.
Well, it's funny, like you look at elite players with term, and there are three Predators on there with Jonathan Marchessault, Ryan O'Reilly, Steven Stamkos, and I have no pushback and don't disagree with you at all, but if this team continues to play like they have the last 2 weeks, they might make it interesting, and he won't, because I know that he won't, but I really want Barry Trotz to just look at everybody and go, I told you so, because he's going to end up looking pretty smart.
I mean, that'd be great, right? If they could put together a nice little streak and continue to play as effectively as they played recently. I mean, you know, the other night where Nashville beat Colorado and Buffalo beat Edmonton. And I'm just like, that's hockey, baby. You just never know what's going to come down the pike. Yeah, I mean, there's been an uptick, obviously. I think the temperature has been turned down a little bit around this Nashville team, which is a good thing. But, you know, ultimately, Barry, the other question Barry has to answer is what the next few years for this franchise look like. And that's when you start getting into conversations about Stamkos and start getting into conversations about O'Reilly, who obviously lacks the trade protection that other players that I mentioned from Nashville have. And, you know, it's not as if teams around the league aren't going to stop calling, wondering about some of these guys. So it's that delicate balance. Because look, boys, I mean, like, despite the fact that Nashville's been playing better, you're still kind of a country mile away from a playoff spot right now because of how good the conference is, and that's really the tricky part.
Yeah, so when you look at a team like Nashville that's gotten on a little bit of a hot streak or a warm streak as of late, in your mind, what do they need to be, and at what point do they need to be, whatever that is, to start getting in the conversation of, hey, we're not looking to sell these assets. We'd actually might like to try to add.
Yeah, that's the question. You know, is how far back do they need to be? At what point in the season does it need to be? I mean, I think all the teams in the NHL are kind of anticipating the Olympic break as being a time to really sort of evaluate things. Because then after the players get back from Italy, then it's a sprint to the trade deadline. So the fact that we have that Olympic break might mess with the scheduling, I think, of what we would typically see in an NHL season insofar as when trades happen. But I don't know. It's a question only Barry can answer. And listen, you know, as I found out from him a few weeks ago, we chatted about the plight of the Predators. It may also be a question he's waiting to hear the answer from ownership. I mean, that was one of the big things about Andrew Brunette's fate, is that no one had basically put the pressure on Barry to make a change. So if, you know, it comes down from a tier or two above him that they want to see the roster reshaped despite where the Predators are in the standings, then that might also be an influence on him.
Talking to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN.com. Greg, you're around the league. You talked to a lot of people. I mean, is Stamkos' name even mentioned in passing and being traded? Would any team want him at this salary?
Well, you see, you just tacked the caveat on at the end. I think teams would want him. You still see Stamkos. You know, I was talking to Tyler Johnson, who was his teammate in Tampa Bay, in Tampa for a really long time, about Stamkos, and he said, "Look, man, you know, you don't forget how to shoot the puck. You don't forget how to make plays. Like, sometimes it's just a matter of getting your confidence back or getting a change in scenery, and you might be able to recapture some of that magic." But like you said, the real question is, at that price point, with that contract, and is it a place that he even wants to go? And those are the sorts of questions that you hear around the league with regard to Steven Stamkos. You know, if a move was ever going to be made, is how much retention would there be? And if there is retention, you know, what would the price be the other way to acquire the player? And then, you know, obviously on top of that, like I mentioned with Ryan O'Reilly, the trick with Stamkos is that he's got total control over where he wants to go and where he wants to take his family next.
Where would he be the best fit? I mean, a team right now, if they added Steven Stamkos, would just solidify that hockey team and look forward to a spring run in the Stanley Cup final.
Well, I think in Stammer's case, it'd be the ideal place is going to be kind of in a situation like he had in Tampa. Like, he's an older player now. He's not the guy scoring 60 goals anymore or threatening to win MVP. But he's a really good offensive player who I think could fit better on a team where he's not necessarily going to have to carry the ball all the time. And so when you think about teams like Colorado or you know, Toronto maybe, you know, places where there's guys that are premium offensive stars, they're going to be counted on to do most of the heavy lifting. I think him going to a team where he can kind of fit in and find his role and contribute, especially on a high power play, for example, I think that's kind of be the best fit for him. But again, like, the thing about Steven is that family is so important and location is so important that you wonder if it needs to be a place that he's familiar with, like that he wants to go to. And if that's the case, then you start thinking about places like Toronto, for example.
Greg, when's the last time two teams such as the Avalanche and the Stars, I mean, 49 points for Colorado, 47 for Dallas, have been dominant over the entire league within the same division like they are right now? Because I know Colorado lost to the Knights in Nashville. I get all that in overtime. But these two guys, like you said earlier, are just running away with everything.
They are, and it's been interesting to see people kind of wake up to how good Dallas has been. Like, I feel like there's been so much said and written about Colorado only having, you know, two regulation losses and McKinnon basically trampling the league offensively that there wasn't really recognition of how good Dallas has been. But I think people are starting to really take notice. And the big difference between Colorado and Dallas is that Dallas has been doing it through some pretty significant injuries. Like, they just got Matt Duchene back. Thomas Harley's been out of the lineup. Like, they've been really thriving despite not having a full lineup and also having to kind of find their way after a coaching change where they fired DeBoer and bring in Glenn Gullitson. So I've been extremely impressed with the way that Dallas has played. But, you know, until they find a way to maybe get to the top of the division, there's a real Mozart-Salieri thing happening right now between the Avalanche and the Dallas Stars in that division.
Greg Wyshynski is with us. Is Anaheim legit, or is this just through 30 games, the Joel Quenneville bump, and then they might fall back to reality at some point?
No, they're legit, and I'll tell you why. Because they've kept winning despite an injury to their goalie, Lucas Dostal, who I thought was the reason they were winning early in the season. Like, their defensive metrics were garbage. And this guy was playing Vezina-worthy goaltending for them. And yet when he went out of the lineup, they just kept on kind of thriving and kept on winning. And I think that's a testament to how good they've been offensively. And it's a testament to maybe the maturation of their team defensively. So they're for real. I mean, they've got a real good balance of bright young star players like Leo Carlson and others. And then they've got those, you know, those veteran hands, be it Jacob Trouba, Chris Kreider, Alex Killorn, who are there to kind of keep the wheel steady during adversity. And then obviously Joel Quenneville behind the bench, bringing it all together in his first year in Anaheim.
What about Detroit? Is this going to be the year that Red Wings fans can finally say, hey, we're back in the playoffs?
The Eiser plan worked. They're still a team I'm not convinced on, right? I'm not convinced on them for one particular reason, which is that they've been carried by about five or six guys so far this season. You know, it's been Dylan Larkin, Lucas Raymond, Mo Seider, Alex DeBrincat, and then when Patrick Kane came back, Kane's been nearly a point-per-game player. They've not really gotten a ton of secondary scoring out of their lineup, either from the forward group or especially on defense. And so that gives me pause when you start to think about the depth that other teams in the East have. But, you know, they're getting good goaltending from Cam Talbot. They're winning games. They're picking up points. The fear for them is the same fear that I think a lot of teams in the Atlantic have, which is that Florida is going to get Matt Tkachuk back at some point. And when that happens, do they start rocketing up the standings and take one of these playoff spots away from Detroit or Montreal or Ottawa?
Greg, we had a thing earlier, Chase and I talked, and there's a list of the top 10 most hapless U.S. sports franchises around. And the number one hockey franchise is the Buffalo Sabres. Now, there's no argument there and everything, but I mean, what a resilient fan base when you're named the most hapless franchise. Is that true? I mean, are they the most hapless hockey franchise?
At this point, you'd have to say so. I mean, you know, the people will probably say that because of the drought, the Leafs could be up there. I mean, obviously, there are other teams that have never won a cup like Vancouver that might be up there. But if you think about recent history, the fact that the Sabres are threatening my beloved New York Jets for the longest playoff drought of any team in any sport, you know, that tells you everything you need to know about the Buffalo Sabres. But again, like, it's the firing of coaches. It's the changing of general managers. It's tanking for the second overall pick in the draft and finding Jack Eichel and then having him request a trade and then having to trade him when you refuse to allow him to have the surgery he wants. Like, it's tons and tons of these things in the last 15 years of this franchise that do add up for them to them being the most hapless team in the NHL. And unfortunately, as you see in the standings right now, it just continues on this season.
Yeah, Greg, we're not going to – we should tell you, but the number one overall most hapless U.S. franchise are the New York Jets.
Yeah, there
so
you go.
So I'm sorry.
I mean, come on. Like, I live that, okay? It's not any news to me. It's my life. It's the curse that I bear. I mean, it's going into a weekend and not knowing if Brady Cook's going to be your starting quarterback. It just goes on and on. It never ends.
Greg, before we let you go, you know I have to ask. John Cena will wrestle his final match, supposedly, Saturday night in Washington, D.C. on Saturday night's main event. Do you believe it's truly it for him, or could we see Dwayne make a – people are shaking their heads here. Could we see Dwayne make an appearance and that set the final match up for WrestleMania?
Well, first of all, Dwayne's got a carb load a little bit to build back the muscle that he lost going to Hollywood. That's for one thing. I've seen him on the red carpet. He's got to get back in fighting shape. You know, listen, I think the buildup for this thing has pointed it to it being his final match. It's going to be a real emotional moment. I hope that he goes out on his back like every wrestler should, but we'll see if that happens. You know, for him to come back would cheapen things. And, you know, listen, we've all seen a, you know, 100-year-old Ric Flair taking chops in the corner, so we know that anything is possible when it comes to old wrestlers. But I hope that this is it, because at least the end of this run would be a bit storybook, if not the entirety of the run with the, as we talked about before, ill-fated heel turn that he had. I think the end of this thing has come together really nicely for him.
I would agree. Should be fun to watch. Greg, appreciate it as always. We'll talk to you next week.
Anytime. Thanks.
Greg Wyshynski, presented by Old National Bank. Get old. We'll react to some of that and more coming up next. Again, we're live today at Duncan. We're in the Capitol View area here. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game.